I'm happy to be here with you. I'm happy to have you here with me. I'm here, as always, to speak about self-inquiry. Which is a radically simple means whereby we can rid ourselves of misery and suffering in our lives. Not pain and hardship, but misery and suffering in our lives. I found that the most difficult task that I have in speaking about self-inquiry is trying to distinguish self-inquiry from all the other spiritual stuff that goes on in the world and has been for some time. Self-inquiry itself is very old. The idea of self-inquiry, the idea of investigating to find out the reality of what I am, is very old, maybe 2,500 years, maybe even longer. It may have been a practice among the Aryan tribes before they even got into India. But until recently, until the advent of Ramana Maharshi, self-inquiry was a part of the whole spiritual basket, the whole business of spiritual aspiration and attainment. It was one means among many for attaining spiritual fulfillment. Even with Ramana, it is sometimes difficult to hear from him the simplicity of the method of self-inquiry, because Ramana was willing to speak with everybody about anything. I mean, he was willing to speak with nobody about anything also. And he was willing to speak with everybody about everything. But one thread that ran through all of Ramana's teaching and all of Ramana's work was a radically, fundamentally different view of self-inquiry as a means of ridding ourselves of misery and suffering in our lives. You see, it seems to me that spiritual work, spiritual aspirations, spiritual work toward attainment of spiritual fulfillment has some things that are in common no matter in what tradition you find it. Even in the religious traditions, there's a view that in our lives, as people, as personalities, we can become something more open, more loving, more complete, more fulfilled than we are. And there is a vast array of methods that are offered to us for doing so, one of which is the description of what we should be, or actually the description of what we would be if we were awakened beings, like compassionate or detached or dispassionate or loving or welcoming or I don't know, a lot of things. There's too many things to enumerate. The things that, the characteristics that we would have if we were to attain what it is we'd like to attain, which is some final spiritual fulfillment, which would put an end to all of our misery and suffering and all of our wanting and not getting. We would be open-hearted. We would be honest. We would be loving. We would be compassionate. We would not be affected by the things that happen to us in our lives. We would be long-suffering and all of that stuff. We would be awake. We would be We would know everything. We would have no questions. We would be free and know it. So that's one, that's part of one of the parcels of spiritual work that we are given, which is to understand what we should be like in order to be fulfilled spiritual beings. How we can tell that we have accomplished what it is we set out to accomplish in our spiritual lives. How we can tell that we are like the Buddha or like Ramana Maharshi or any of those guys or women. We would be like this. Another segment of spiritual work has to do with methods whereby we can cultivate and capture those characteristics in our lives. How can we can become more compassionate, less involved in what happens to our lives, less antagonistic and aggressive toward our neighbors and friends and enemies. How we can love our enemies, how we can be like that. Methods whereby we can attain those things. Equanimity, compassion, love, open-heartedness, and so forth. There are meditative methods, there are mantra methods, there are methods of gaining sufficient understanding to wipe out the confusion and ignorance that stands in the way of us becoming what it is that we should be and want to be. There are transmissions, there are states that can be attained through the proper meditation or the presence of the proper guru that will have a twofold effect. One, they will reveal to us some of the things that we should be, the state that we should have if we are to be fulfilled and finished with wanting and so forth. And secondly, they will in some way correct us by repeated falling into these states, these samadhis, these, and so forth. There are ritualistic and liturgical elements that we can do, and different traditions, different religions have different ways of approaching this, but they have liturgical and ritualistic behaviors that we can enact and make a part of us, like japa, for example, and the recitation of Christian prayers and things like that, that themselves have as their goal to change and modify and transform our minds and the way we think, or to stop us from thinking, because thinking is one of the problems. To make us more spontaneous, less driven by thought and emotion. And for most of the history of spiritual aspiration in this world, is in this species, in this human species, the idea of self-inquiry has been part and parcel of that whole view, which is that the purpose of spiritual work is to transform me, my personal consciousness, and rid it of its stupidity, its ignorance, its acquisitiveness, its all of that stuff, to make it whole, compassionate, at peace, thought-free, and so on. But the self-inquiry that I heard from Ramana Maharshi has nothing to do with any of that. So it's not like one more alternative way in which to attain spiritual fulfillment. It has nothing to do with spiritual fulfillment. It's not one more way of clearing up and correcting the ignorance and stupidity that constitute my personal consciousness and my mind and my history and all of that. It has nothing to do with any of that. For you see that even in the long long trail that we have been walking toward some idea of spiritual aspiration, these thousands of years of trying to find the end of our spiritual search. There have been from time to time these weird, really kind of strange, quirky claims by those who are looked up to as having attained what we'd like to attain. There have been these really weird and quirky statements that it's almost impossible to make sense of, the essence of which is that you already are exactly what you want to be. That what you are looking for is all you already see. That what you are seeking to know, there is nothing to you but the knowing of that already. And that in the end, if there is an end finally to your spiritual endeavors and your spiritual aspiration, it will be to see that what you have aspired to is already the case, has never not been the case, without regard to how smart or dumb you are, without regard to how acquisitive or generous this personality is, without regard to your understanding or your lack of understanding, that what you are seeking has always been already the case. And that's weird. That's just weird when we are in the spiritual life, when we are desperately seeking to find an end to the seeking. It is just weird to be told that we already are that. Yes, yes, but how do I get to know that? But you already do know that. Yes, yes, but you already are. And this you must know if you've been in the spiritual life for any time at all, and it really doesn't matter what tradition it is, they all have that at their heart. You must know, you must recognize this. And I know that in my own life as a spiritual person, prior to ridding myself of that foolishness, that I would hear those things and I would say, that's just weird. I guess I'll figure out what they were talking about when finally I find what it is I'm seeking. Well, there's one other insight that's at the core of every spiritual teaching. It's really at the heart of every religious tradition. It's at the heart of everything that drives us into this spiritual life to begin with. And that is that we are not what we think we are. We are not what we believe ourselves to be. And that's the problem. We are not what we believe ourselves to be. And that's the problem. That, too, you must be familiar with. It comes up as ego identification and gets us trying to machine gun ego and kill off ego and die and all of that stuff. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere in the spiritual world. We are not what we believe ourselves to be. And that's the problem. And what we have done with that for these thousands of years have been to incorporate it into that overall spiritual viewpoint, which is, I have to do something with this personal consciousness to change it so it no longer is misidentified, no longer believes itself to be something that it is not. So we do meditation practices and we go to gurus and we get transmissions and we get Shaktipat and we get God knows what else we get. And we get hits of glorious, wondrous, blissful open-heartedness and peace. No mind, no thought. And we say, ah, that's it. That's what it feels like. That's what I have to get to. That's what I have to keep. That's what it means to not believe myself to be what I am not. That state. But another thing that everybody agrees upon in the spiritual world is that reality is permanent, unmoving, unchanging, unaffected, eternal. So if what I'm looking for is this state that I had an experience of back in 1994, when the skies opened up and all thought fled and I had oceanic 360-degree vision, and I had no thoughts, and I was peace and free. And well, something's got to be wrong. Either reality is not unchanging, or that's not it. That's another wondrous experience that came and went. Well, here's the thing. And this is the difficulty that I have, is to try to persuade everybody I speak with to just consider the possibility that self-inquiry has nothing to do with any of that, has nothing to do with changing your personality, has nothing to do with changing the way you think about things, has nothing to do with ridding you of bad thoughts, of holding on to good thoughts, of giving you good states, of getting rid of bad states. It has nothing to do with turning you into a saint. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with the heart of the matter, which all agree, is that we are not what we believe ourselves to be. Only instead of trying to fix that which we erroneously believe ourselves to be, what we do is we look at the reality of what we are as often as we can, as repeatedly as is possible for us to do so. Not with a spiritual intent, although any motive will do. I got an email from somebody today who lamented that she was obviously making a mistake because she couldn't find a way to do self-inquiry except in order to try to fix herself. And I wrote right back to her and I said, please don't concern yourself with the motive for doing self-inquiry. Any motive will do. It's the looking that does the work. It's the looking that does the work. Nothing whatsoever about your personality or your personal consciousness has anything to do with it. You are not that. We falsely believe ourselves to be these lives, the whole of these lives. It's not that within these lives we falsely believe ourselves to be some component of these lives, some interior phenomenon. It is the totality of these lives that is the object of our false belief. All of it. The good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, the wondrousness, the stupidity, the states of bliss, the states of horror and depression and antagonism and aggression, the memory, the spiritual desires, the non-spiritual desires, this personality, this personal consciousness that is all we know. So, you know, it's okay, nothing you do to help change these personal lives can help you, but it can't hurt you either. Nothing you do to change and reform the way you think about things can help you, but it can't hurt you either. The only thing that counts and this is, I mean this with all my heart, the only thing that counts, the only thing that counts is to look to see the reality of what you are, which is really simple, because it's really true what they have told us, and that is that what we are trying to see, we are always already seeing. What we are trying to know, we are always already knowing. It is absolutely impossible for you to rid yourself of seeing yourself. It's impossible. And it is absolutely possible for you to consciously look at this reality. Not in order to persuade yourself that that's what you are by understanding, but just to look at it. Because in looking at it, the false belief that you are this life gradually, over time, goes away. Just kind of fades away. You won't even notice it's gone because already you are seeing everything you have been trying to see. Already you are knowing everything you are trying to know. Already you are everything you are trying to be. But what you will notice over time is that the index of misery and suffering in your life will go down. Not necessarily the pain and hardship, but the misery and suffering will go down. The deep, deep, energetic conviction that you are at stake in this life will diminish. The deep, underlying fear and anxiety that drives us all will dissipate. And the life will kind of clunk on as it does. It will be much better in the absence of your belief that it's you and that it better shape up. It better get better. But it'll, do what it does. It will unfold as it's unfolding already. And you'll love it. As you really do already. So here's the self-inquiry that I heard from Ramana Maharshi, and the practice of which, I tell you from my heart, you don't have to believe me, but I tell you from my heart, the practice of which has eliminated misery and suffering in this life. The practice of self-inquiry that I got from Ramana is just this. Whenever you can, whenever it occurs to you to do so, just stop for a second. I mean, really, whenever it occurs to you, just stop for a second and look at this feeling of presence that's always here, not something new. This feeling of presence that's always here, that is too subtle to speak about, that is never absent, that is always the same, never changed. Just look at it. I am here. What does that feel like? I am here. This presence, this sense of presence. Just look at that. And if you do that over time, I promise you, over time, this belief, this horrible belief that you are this life will depart from you. It'll be gone before you know it's gone. I promise that. And it doesn't matter. I mean, I speak as though it does matter, but it doesn't matter why you do it. Really, it doesn't. You can do it, in order to get a new relationship, or if you think it's going to bring you more money, or if you think it's going to fix your life or make you a better person, that's okay, as long as you're looking at this reality. Doesn't matter why you do it. As long as you're looking at this reality, as long as you're looking for this presence, this feeling of presence, everything else will be taken care of. So, it's not spiritual. It's not intended to fix you. It's not intended to make you a better person or a worse person. It's not intended to give you any understanding of the nature of the universe and reality. The purpose of self-inquiry is to rid you of this lie. And in the absence of this lie, misery and suffering depart. Okay. Not instantly. For some, it's been really interesting to me over the time of being able to do this work. For me, it seemed to take forever. Really. Seemed to take forever. And I never, throughout that whole period, I never thought that I was getting anywhere. Until I realized that life's easy. Has been for some time. For others that I have been with over these many years, it seems to take almost no time at all. So it's not like anything else. You just look at yourself. And the one other thing that is pretty consistently reported to me from people who have embarked on this adventure is that it doesn't take very long before the call to look at themselves is spontaneously arising. And just, it's just, they just feel like they want to stop for a second and feel this presence, this reality, That's what you are. Does anybody want to talk to me or argue with me or anything with me? Guess not. Does anybody not follow what it is that I'm saying? I mean, really, just like, don't have a clue what it is I'm trying to get across? Well, then we could wrap this up and go home. Virginia? I'm happy to see you, daughter.
Have to do anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't even know how to frame my question, but I'll try. It seems very tricky sometimes. When there's a lot of things that appear to need address, like things on the body level and things on the, you know, psychological level and issues and all of that stuff, to go to address them and not get identified or make it a problem.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
You can make it a problem. I mean, really, you know, what's tricky, what's so hard, and it seems to me that most of the things that people bring to me, the questions that people bring to me about doing this right, doing this wrong, have to do there's an idea that we have that we look to the way the life is, the kind of thoughts that are happening, the kind of drama that's taking place, the kind of spiritual understandings or rejections and so forth that are happening. We look to what's happening in the life as a way of confirming or not confirming that what I am doing or what I am is real. And the fact is, none of that is of any consequence. Even identification is of no consequence. Identification is a higher order than this underlying belief that is unseeable. It really is unconscious. It is absolutely not possible to see, because really it is through the belief that we see everything else. This belief is like the lens that we look through to see our lives and our relationships and our thoughts and our history and all of that. No matter what's happening in the life, no matter what level of identification or misidentification or, you know, involvement in the drama or involvement in thoughts, or no matter what's going on, this presence is still here and absolutely can be seen, you know, just like that. And it isn't going to change anything. It's not going to fix all the ignorance and stupidity. That's just, you know, the way the life is. But the presence is you. And looking at it, in looking at it, you know that to be true. And what we're after is the eradication of misery and suffering, not of stupidity and hardship and pain, because we don't have anything to say about that. That comes as it does, comes and goes. Sometimes you're good, sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. But this reality is unchanging, always here, and it's you. And what we're after is to rid the life of misery and suffering, of the deep-seated anxiety and fear that is habitual, and it's what makes us think that it matters that I'm involved in this drama, or it matters that I am still kind of identified with what happens to me. It's that underlying conviction that I'm at stake in this, and the anxiety and fear that arise from that conviction that drives the whole show of, oh, I've got to fix this, and there must be something wrong. If I still get stupid like this, there must be something wrong.
It seems like, for me, it comes down, how can I say this? The survival of, we've talked about this before, the survival of a lot of what goes on in the personality and believing I am this life. Most of the functions, whether neurotic or helpful, come down to survival of the organism.
Yeah.
And but yet, you know, presence is always here, but where I get concerned is when some of the you know, mumbo-jumbo stuff is threatening the organism's survival.
But it's the mumbo-jumbo stuff, really, is the stuff that tells you that dealing with things that threaten the survival of the organism are somehow unspiritual. Or a problem.
I'm talking specifically, you know, about like working too much so that I'm kind of hurting my body, and it doesn't say that I'm unspiritual, but there's just some patterns that aren't very good for the survival of the organism.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
And you know, there are some things that can be done about those kind of patterns, right? And there's nothing wrong with those practices that are specifically designed to deal with those kind of neurotic or obsessive compulsive patterns and so forth. The problem with them is not that they are, that there's something wrong with them. The only problem with them is when it is driven by the conviction that I have to rid myself of these things because I'm at stake here, because there's something I'm doing really wrong. You know, it's like, first, see what you are. You know, when we try to do something about the life and the personality, still convinced that we are the life and the personality, all we can do is cause trouble. Mm-hmm. But when you're rid of this idea that you are the life and the personality, then do what you need to do. Who cares? Really.
And I psychological practices, it's just like, there's times when it's just like putting a band-aid on. Something needs to be addressed.
Right.
But just not in the
right
context that.
Then the context that you're at stake here. You know that there's something like, if I don't fix this, I'll never go to heaven. Or
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I think if I don't fix it, my body won't survive. You know, that's survival.
And of course, your body won't survive.
It won't survive anyway.
But you know, I'll take care of it. I do the best I can with what I have to work with here also. But I'll tell you something else, Virginia, and you see over time if this isn't the case. The less that you are held by this belief that this life is you, the easier things will be in the life. Some of these patterns, these tendencies, these inclinations, they run for a while and then they just kind of go away. You know, they just kind of lose interest in themselves. And the more attention you put on them, it's like putting energy into them. If it is a real problem that persists over time, then do something about it. But I think you'll find that the more you do this inquiry, and the less grip this belief that you are the life has, that most of these patterns will just kind of run down. And it's really interesting because they seem so important to us when we are caught in the grip that we are these lives, but they just kind of lose interest after a while. They kind of lose interest in themselves, you know, and see if that's not the case too.
I really love the simplicity of just the from time to time, whenever it occurs to me, remember who I am. And when I did the 5-week group with you, that was more present for me, and it was very helpful. And you know, it's been a while since I've seen you, so I kind of got I wandered off a little bit. But that's,
we may do another one of those groups sometime. So we've been thinking about it a couple times. But yeah, it's helpful, you know. It's helpful. But you're doing good. We've known each other for a while now, and I see the change. You know, I see the ease. There's an ease to you that wasn't the case when we first met. And that's a consequence of this. It's a consequence of this work. And don't be surprised if these things that trouble you, you know, you'll just lose interest in them.
Sounds really wonderful. Yeah.
that helpful?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. You know, I sometimes feel like I don't want to say anything about this is going to have a good effect on your life. But it had quite a good effect on this life. I mean, I don't rob banks anymore. I don't do anything like that anymore. And I kind of have lost interest in even thinking about why I don't. I tell you, the life, it's a mystery. You know, there's a lot of stories that have been told about it. There's a lot of stories that have been told about everything. And we take these, this is why I'm so reluctant to tell more stories about things. Because we take these stories on, and then we use them as examples of how we should be. Oh, if I am to be free, then I will be like this. And then there we are, back into working on my personal consciousness or my personality in order to gain freedom, which has never been missing in the first place. But it is true. And it's true for everybody I have heard from about this. It is true that the inquiry, the diminishment of the grip of the lie that you are this life has a wondrous effect on the life. I mean, it's like the life says, phew, boy, good riddance to you. Seriously. I've never come across anything that's as good for the life as this. And God knows I tried. I tried to be good. I really tried to be good. Okay? That's all I want. And all I want is for everybody I speak to try this. Just to try this. You know, it's not like a lot of other things that you run into in the spiritual world where you are expected to turn away from everything else. You're expected to, fast or give your life to the guru or pay big money or give up your firstborn child. It's not like that. Nothing can stop you from trying to just look at what this presence feels like. Nothing can prevent that. Nobody can sell that to you. Nobody can give that to you. Nobody can take that away from you. And it is the secret of eternal happiness. Okay? Anything more? You okay? Good. Okay then, let's go home and go to bed and enjoy ourselves. The whole thing this is about is enjoying your life. Really. That's what these lives are for. These lives are the instruments of awareness, the instruments of this presence, whereby it can see itself. They are for enjoyment only. Even the drama, even the horror, it's for enjoyment only. Ramana said that the only thing that remains are vasanas of enjoyment. And actually, they are all vasanas of enjoyment. Vasanas of enjoyment. Vasanas are predispositions, old patterns of behavior.
V-A-S-A-N-A-S.
More or less.
Tendencies,
yeah. It's a spiritual term, and really need not trouble you, I promise.
What language is it? I'm sorry.
Sanskrit, I would imagine.
I would think about
it. It's Sanskrit. It's all Sanskrit. You know, it all came from these Aryan tribes that ran into India and took everything over. All of the spiritual stuff that we are so in love with all came from those guys.
We may not be as spiritual as you think we are.
It's quite useful, and sometimes useful, to see the context in which all of this arose. You know, when we receive this as like the truth of the ages bestowed upon us by whoever bestows it upon us, it's like, oh my God. But when you can see the context in which all this arose, you see that we are all in this together. That from the very beginning, human beings have been after the truth. From the very beginning, human beings have struggled and fought and thought and all trying to find what's real. And everywhere in the world, this has been the case. And we all always have come up with the same ideas, with the same approaches. You know, with here they look a little bit different than here, they have different names and so forth, but all come up with the same approaches, the same fundamental insights, the same mistakes. For thousands of years we've been making this same mistake of trying to fix what is not the problem, of trying to fix what it is we falsely believe ourselves to be, which false belief itself is the problem. For thousands of years, all predicated on genuine and heartfelt insights into reality, all of it. But we're grown up now. We really can see what's real, without needing to hate the mistakes we've made in the past. We can see what's real, and we can see how easy it is to be rid of this foolishness, this idea that I am this life. I've always known that wasn't true. Always. Okay, thank you so much. It's always a great joy to me to meet with you guys. And I'll see you soon. Om Shanti.